Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Neema Novetsky discusses Parshat Pinchas. Neema is a faculty member at Pardes, specializing in Tanakh. And now, Neema Novetsky.
Our Parsha opens right where last week's Parsha left off, in the middle of the story of the sin of Baal Peor. As the nation strays after the women of Moab, and they then turn to idolatry, God's anger is roused. A plague ensues, and it is only stilled by the zealous actions of Pinchas, the grandson of Aaron. He takes matters into his own hands and kills two of the most public of perpetrators, Zimri, the prince of the tribe of Shimon, and Cusbi, a Midianite princess. The verses seem to laud Pinchas' actions. It is because of them that the plague stops. It is because of them that God is no longer angry. Hashem says, Pinchas ben Elazar ha-Kohen hishiv et chamati mi'al b'nei Yisrael b'kano et kinati b'tocham. Pinchas was the one who quieted God's wrath. It was he who fought God's battles. And in return for his actions, he is given a reward. Hineni notein lo et briti shalom. God gives him a covenant of peace. All this would suggest that God found his deed virtuous, that God found his deed worthy of praise. That said, I think that for many, Pinchas' actions make us question. They make us a little uncomfortable, for after all, didn't he take the law into his own hands? Didn't he circumvent judicial procedure? The Gemara in Sanhedrin even suggests that Pinchas should be seen as a rodef, someone who is trying to murder someone else, and if someone had killed Pinchas in self-defense, that person would not be held accountable. Similarly, the Talmud Yerushalmi, again in Masechet Sanhedrin, also does not seem to be so happy with Pinchas' actions, and they question. They say, the people of the time, bikshu l'nadoto, the people of the time tried and wanted to excommunicate him, and they would have, ilei shekavtza lav ruach hakadosh, Ruach HaKodesh, v'amra, v'hayta lo ulezaro acharav brit kuhunat olam. Had it not been for the divine spirit that sprung up upon him and said, and he and his descendants after him shall have the covenant of priesthood. Had Hashem not said that, says the Sanhedrin, the people would have excommunicated Pinchas. So again, it makes us question. Is zealousy as played out here, is vigilantism a desirable action? Are Pinchas' actions here something that should be rewarded? Or is he perhaps not setting a dangerous precedent? To answer these questions, we're going to go back to the Mikra and do a close reading of the text to see how did the various commentators understand and evaluate Pinchas' action. We're going to focus on two parts of the story. First, the context of Pinchas' action. And then second, God's reaction, the reward given to Pinchas. We'll see how the various Mefarshim understand each and how the different understandings might affect our understandings of Pinchas' actions himself and our evaluation thereof and also of Hashem's reaction. So let's start at the beginning. As we said, our story opens with the people of Israel going after Banot Moav and committing idolatry. After this action, the pasuk reads, "Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, kach et kol rashei ha'am, v'hoka otam laHashem neged Hashemesh, v'yashov charon af Hashem Yisrael." And God said to Moshe, "Take all of the chiefs of the people and hang them up before the Lord against the sun, that the burning anger of the Lord may be turned away from Yisrael." Then Moshe responds. Moshe acts in response. "Vayomer Moshe el shoftei Yisrael." Hergu ish anashav hanitzmadim lebal pa'or. And Moshe says to the judges of Israel, slay everyone his men that have been attaching themselves to Baal Pa'or. There's a slight ambiguity in the first verse that we just read. The verse said that Hashem tells Moshe, v'hokautam, and hang them. Who is the them that is referred to? Already in Bamidbar Rabbah, we see that there's a machloket, that there's a controversy amongst the Tanaim as to who is referred to, who is supposed to be hanged. Rabbi Yudan Amar, Rashei Ha'am Tala. Rabbi Yudan says, the heads of the nations themselves were supposed to be hanged. Al Shalom Yichu Bivnei Adam, because they didn't stop the people, the nation, from perpetrating this act of idolatry. Rav Nechemya disagrees. He says, Lo tala, ela amar le hakadosh baruch hu lemoshe, hoshiv lehem mashe hasanhedraot, v'yu danin kol mi sheholech lepo'or. Rav Nechemya thinks that it wasn't the heads of the nation that were supposed to be hanged, but rather that Hashem had told Moshe to tell the heads of the nations, to tell the people that they should go and create batei din to hang all those that had committed the crime. When we go back to the verse, on first read, it seems that Rabbi Yudin is actually the pshat of the pasuk, because Moshe is told, Kacha kol rashei ha'am, take the heads of the nation, v'hokalatam, and hang them. Presumably the them, the word otam, refers back to the previous object, which had been Rashei Ha'am. And if so, Moshe was commanded to hang the leaders. And according to Bamidbar Rabbah, what for? Not because they themselves committed the act, but because they didn't stop others from committing the act. The difficulty with this approach, though, is the very next verse. Because in the next verse, it doesn't sound like Moshe is hanging the people. It's hanging the heads of the nations. But rather that he's telling the Shoftim to hang those that had committed the crime. And it's surprising that Moshe would change from the words of God, which is what leads people like Rav Nechemya and many Rishonim in his wake to say, ah, the Otam in that first Pasuk then could not have meant the Rashei Ha'am that precedes it, but rather must be referring to those who were perpetrating the crime, those that were committing idolatry. Among those who take this approach is Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra says, the Rashei Ha'am and the Shoftim of these two verses are the same people. And as it says, Moshe had commanded the Rashei Ha'am to go and kill all those that had committed idolatry. But he asks another question. From the verse itself, we don't know what happened. We only hear the command to go and kill them. We don't hear whether or not they actually fulfilled the command. Ibn Ezra suggests that even though the Torah doesn't mention it, the assumption is that it happened. According to this read then, what we have in the text is the sin of the nation, punishment of the sin of the nation, and then the Ma'aseh of Zimri, the act of Zimri, is unrelated to the nation's sin of Baal Peor. That had already been punished by the heads of the nation. Zimri's actions is its own horrible act, which needed its own kapara, which needed its own atonement. And for that, Pinchas goes and takes matters into his own hands. Pinchas becomes a vigilante who goes and attacks and kills him in order to sway the wrath of God. This read, though, has its problems. Because according to the verses, it sounds like the plague that had ensued after the idolatry of the nation was stopped not because of the hanging led by the nation's heads, but rather because of the maaseh of Pinchas himself, because of the act of Pinchas himself. Yet, according to Ibn Ezra, the act of Pinchas itself had nothing to do with the magifah. Second, as we said before, the much simpler reading of the word otam is to have it refer to the words that come right before it in the pasuk, Rashei Ha'am. And so, we might go back to the reading of Rav Yudin and say, yes, in fact, what was commanded? In that first verse, what was commanded was that the heads of the people be killed. Moshe was supposed to hang the heads of the people. Then how do we read the second verse where it sounds like Moshe is not fulfilling that? So the way you read this is to say, Rashei Ha'am of the first verse is not identical with the Shoftim of the second verse. The Shoftim of the second verse are a separate group of people who are meant to kill the Rashei Ha'am of the first verse. And so Moshe, in fact, is doing exactly what Hashem told him to do. He's setting up batei din in order to kill the heads of the nation. Why, though, do the heads of the nation need to be killed? Perhaps not like the reading in Bamidbar Rabbah. It's not because lo machu, that they didn't stop the people from acting, but perhaps because they actually did something. Because as Moshe is talking to the Shoftim, to the judges, to go and kill Rashei Ha'am, what do we see in the very next verse? That one such head of the nation, Zimri, is going and sitting just like the rest of the people. Right after we read that, we see what is the nation doing. Uleine kol adat b'nei Yisrael, he does his action in front of the eyes of all of the people. V'heima bochim petach ol moed. We have a picture in the text of the nation watching Zimri in his act and crying. What we have here is a picture of inaction. The people are crying, perhaps despairing, that they've come to such a place where their head of the tribe is actually committing such a sin. And what happens? It's only Zimri, perhaps one of those shoftim that Moshe had appointed, who's able to get up and act. Yes, Moshe had already commanded that they should go and kill the heads of the people who are going and sinning, but it's only Zimri who's able to take action. Zimri, not as a vigilante, not as someone who's taking this law into his own hands, but Dafka, the only one who's able to follow Moshe's earlier command. So what we have here is two very different reads of the story. In one, yes, Pinchas is acting on his own. He's seeing a horrible act by Zimri, and he's going and taking matters into his own hands to kill him. The other read, though, is a very different Pinchas. A Pinchas who's not only acting on his own, but he's the only one who's able to fulfill the command of Moshe. Everyone else is sitting there in despair, not knowing what to do, frozen. And he is able to get up and act upon orders. The Abarbanel actually has a very interesting read where he tries to actually take the best of both of these two reads. He recognizes, yes, that the word otam in that first verse, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, kach et kol rashei ha'am v'hoka otam, take the heads of the nations and hang them. He says, yes, that them must mean rashei ha'am. However, he doesn't think that the shoftim of the next verse is a different group than the rashei ha'am, but he wants to identify them as well. How then does it work? So let's go and try to understand. He says, what happened? God tells Moshe, go hang the heads of the nation. Why? Abarbanel takes the approach of the Midbar Rabbah and suggests, because they did not stop the nation from sinning. They haven't been doing anything. Moshe understands what God is saying, and he says, God doesn't really want me to hang these heads of nations. He wants them to act. And so what does he do? He says to the Sanhedrin, to the Rashei Ha'am themselves, not that they should get killed, but he tells those Rashei Ha'am, they should go and act. They should go and kill all the perpetrators of the crime. And so Abarbanel combines the two readings we had before. The Otam in the first verse is the Rashei Ha'am, but the Shoftim of the next verse is identical with this Rashei Ha'am, because Moshe now tells them, yes, you might have deserved to be hanged because you didn't do anything, but if you now do something, you don't deserve to be hanged, and instead, what should you do? Go and punish everybody. What happens according to the Abarbanel? So as we notice, it doesn't tell us whether this command was fulfilled or not. Abarbanel suggests, yes, most of the Rashei Ha'am fulfilled the command. They got up and they decided, yes, time to act. They punished all of their perpetrators, each from his own shevet, each from his own tribe, with one exception. The one person who didn't do as commanded, the one leader who didn't do as commanded was Zimri, the head of the tribe of Shimon, who instead of not punishing, not only did he not punish, he went and joined in the sinning. And such an action is what led Zimri to react as he did. And here, again, one has a chance of reading Abarbanel in one of two ways. Either one can say, yes, Zimri here acted on his own in response to the goal of Zimri to go and not just not punish, but in addition to join in the sinning. Or one can say that in effect here, Zimri too, and as in our last read, is not acting as a vigilante, but rather on command. He sees that Zimri, the leader, was supposed to go and punish those in his tribe. Zimri can't punish, and so he takes Zimri's place, and Pinchas becomes the shofet that was meant to punish the tribe of Shimon, starting, of course, with Zimri. So as we've seen, we have different ways of reading the text, and some, Pinchas becomes the vigilante. He's lauded for his zealous actions. And another, Pinchas isn't lauded for taking the for just killing, for just being zealous, but for being the only one who's able to go and punish and fulfill the words of Moshe as commanded. Just as we had different readings of the context of Pinchas' actions, similarly, we have different readings of God's reaction to his actions. So let's read those verses inside. וידבר השם משה לאמור, פנחס בן אלעזר בן אהרון הכהן השיב את חמתי מעל בני ישראל. God spoke to Moshe, saying, Pinchas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, has turned my wrath away from the children of Israel. Lachain emor, hineni noten lo et briti shalom. Wherefore say, Behold, I give to him my covenant of peace. Vahita lo ulezaro acharav brit kohunat olam, tachat asher kinei leloka v'chaper al bnei Yisrael. And a seed after him shall have the covenant of an everlasting priesthood, because he was zealous for his God. These verses raise a couple of questions. To begin with, what exactly is a brit shalom? What is a covenant of peace? Similarly, the promise that he shall have a brit kohunat olam is not totally understandable. After all, is not Pinchas already a kohen? So what is God rewarding him? What is he saying he's going to get? Different mefarshim focus on different aspects of the reward, some more on the brit shalom, some more on the brit kohunat olam. And they read them in different ways. Some suggest that we are talking about a reward. Pinchas is getting something he didn't have. Rashi suggests that, in truth, Pinchas never actually had been a Kohen until this point in time. In some ways, it's a reverse grandfather clause. What happened? When the priests were anointed, Aaron and his sons were anointed, and they were told that all of their children after them shall also be Kohanim. The only problem was that Pinchas had already been born. He hadn't been included in those anointed, and he wasn't going to be born afterwards because he was already born. And so Pinchas was the one that had lost out on the kuhuna. Rashi says, now, in the wake of his actions after the sin of Baal Peor, in the wake of his actions of killing Zimri, he now gets kuhunat olam. He becomes a kohen. That's his reward. Other reads the verse a little bit differently and say, no, all along he had been a Kohen. Then what new thing is he getting now? So Ibn Ezra suggests he's getting Kehuna Gidola. From him shall come many Kohanim Gdolim. And in truth, many Kohanim Gdolim do come from the line of Pinchas. All of the above, both Rashi and Ibn Ezra, assume that God's reaction is to really reward Pinchas for his actions, either, as we said before, because of his zealousness, or because of his fulfilling Moshe's command when no one else was ready to. Others, though, read this whole section slightly differently. And they say, the truth is that Pinchas here is not really getting a reward. Instead, he's getting a promise to retain the status quo. What do I mean? So there's several variations. Rav Yosef Bechor Shor says, what is a brit shalom? A promise of shalom. Literally, a promise of peace. What type of peace? Pinchas might have feared at this point because of Goalei Hadam, because of those that were related to the people that had been murdered, especially in this case, both of them being leaders in their nation, that they might come and kill him for having killed them. So the Brit Shalom that Pinchas is given is a promise that he need not fear anyone coming to avenge the blood that he had just shed. Another possibility is Pinchas had been a Kohen all along, but now there was a question, perhaps he should have lost it due to these very actions. We don't normally envision a Kohen as someone who goes and sheds blood. And perhaps because of Pinchas' actions, we would have had a havam, you know, we would have had the possible thought that Pinchas would lose his kohuna. Comes a verse and says, don't worry, you're not going to lose it. You'll still have a brit kohunat olam. You're still going to be the kohen, even though we might have thought that you deserve to lose it. These are very different reads than those of Rashi and Ibn Ezra. Here, Pinchas is not getting a reward. There's a hava mina that he might have done something wrong. He might have done something that might have caused him to lose his kohuna. In the end, though, we're told he doesn't. There's one other understanding of what a brit shalom is, which I don't think is rooted as much in the pshat of the psukim, but is nonetheless interesting. We'll read from the Nitziv. The Nitziv says, "At briti shalom, b'sachar sheheniach ka'aso v'chamato shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as a reward for quieting the anger of God, berecho b'midat ha-shalom, he blessed him with the midav shalom, shelo yakpid v'lo yargiz, that he shouldn't get angry, ובשביל כי טבע המעשה שעשה פנחס להרוג נפש בידו, Haya notein lashir balev haregesh az gam acharkas, gam acharkach. Aval basher haya l'shem shamayim mishum hachi ba habracha shiye tamid benachat ubemidat hashalom. The Netziv says, since it was only natural that such a deed as Pinchas's should leave in his heart an intense emotional unrest afterwards, the divine blessing that he got was designed to cope with the situation and promised peace and tranquility of soul. The Netziv suggests that Pinchas's actions had to have left their mark on his soul. One can't kill and escape unscathed. And so, what's the reward that Pinchas gets according to the Netziv? He gets the reward that he'll still be an Ish Shalom even though he had killed. So to summarize all that we have seen until now, Pinchas's actions raise questions, but there's more than one way of reading the text. According to some readings, Pinchas is zealous for God, does take matters into his own hands, and yes, he is rewarded for it. In this case, his actions were warranted, and thus he's rewarded. Other readings, though, allow us to say that Pinchas didn't take law into his own hands at all. He was just fulfilling the words of Moshe. And for that, he got a reward. And similarly, we don't even have to read the reward as a reward at all. According to some, yes, it's a reward. According to some, it's just a maintaining of the status quo. And according to others, perhaps, it is just a redemption of his soul. I want to conclude with a question to think about. In Chazal, we see an identification of Pinchas with another character in Tanakh, another character who is known to be a kanai, a zealous person, and that is the character of Eliyahu HaNavi. There are many similarities between the two, starting from their kanaut, from their zealousy, going to the fact that we don't know about either of them having died, to a whole number of other things that Chazal point to as similarities. But what I want us to think about, perhaps, is if one goes back to the figure of Eliyahu and to his kanaut, are the same issues that get raised as regards to Pinchas, the same different possible readings of Pinchas's actions, are they found also by the character of Eliyahu? And can we learn from one to the other? And with that, I'll give you some food for thought. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so please send your emails to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.